Wally, you're not going to turn around, which seems like the right answer for a lot of weather problems. It was just good. Can I do a 180 and go back to those good times? Isn't the undo button the perfect natural response for a changing weather condition?
Typically, we all think of the old 180 to get out of here as the solution. The problem in this scenario is we're already down 450 feet and we're sinking 400 or 500 feet a minute. By the time we make a 180-degree turn, we're going to be down a good chunk of altitude, and we may not hit that rising air when we come back. We may actually be in sinking air. Another reason it's not the best decision is because that ridge we just crossed is pretty high, and we're probably at or below it by now. And if we encounter a rotor on the way back, we're going to lose more altitude, and that puts that ridge right in front of us.
Now, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but following this one step further, assuming you go with your choice and we turn towards Palmdale, are you actually going to land at Palmdale, or are we going to figure it out from there?
Well, I think I'd probably consider landing at Palmdale because this is a pretty exciting experience we've just had, and it might be a good opportunity to relook at the weather and maybe get some local knowledge. So that's likely what I would do.
All right, I see Colleen shaking her head, and I'm wondering if the gusts to 37 knots at Palmdale are on your mind.
No, they're not. It's the fact that Palmdale's not open to incident traffic just coming in like that. So Fox Field, you will be overflying Fox on your way to Palmdale, which is a military airport.
Good point.
So Fox is great. I've landed at Fox with the winds like that. And if the winds are very bad on a crosswind, you just land across the runway because they get that strong that you can literally land your airplane in the 150 feet across, or, you know, not perpendicular, but nearly across, and make a safe landing and then taxi very carefully to the terminal.
So part of this decision is which way to turn. Are we going northwest, going southeast? You're advocating, all of you, for southeast towards Palmdale, whether we land there or not. The second part of this then is, as you said, Wally, what speed do we fly if we turn that way? And I have to say the natural inclination for this pilot, we don't think they're a glider pilot, is going to be VY. Pull that yoke and hold VY like our life depends on it. So Catherine, tell me why that natural instinct is wrong, and is this pilot really going to be able to talk themselves into possibly pushing over?
Yeah, it can be counterintuitive to push the nose over when you're already sinking. So I can understand why the pilot would want to knee-jerk go to VY. As powered pilots, that's what we do to get away from the ground. But in the sinking air, you know, you want, and Wally's absolutely right, you want to get out of that sinking air, and speeding up is going to be the way to do that. And if it is counterintuitive to push forward and see more ground, you know, one thing to always remember is that sinking air doesn't last to the ground. At a certain point, you know, the ground is hard, right? So if you have sinking air, that's got to change at some point to horizontally moving air. So I think this pilot, by speeding up, is going to do himself a favor to get out of the situation more quickly, and it likely will not go. He will not go into the ground, especially if, as Wally says, if he turns around, he's going away from higher ground.
Dave.
You know, I can accept the counterintuitive part of wanting to fly faster. And that just brings up the question of what is the speed to fly for this aircraft? It's always scary when a writer tries to do arithmetic, but it's like if you take, you know, you say, okay, VY is about 90 and the headwind is about 33 knots, we're guessing here. So if you add those two together, I'm guessing the speed to fly would be about 123 knots indicated. Is that a...
No, not necessarily, because you haven't accounted for the sinking air still. It might be 123 knots. I don't know. The variometer in a glider typically has an oral sound, and it's a nice little pleasant chirping sound when you're climbing, and it increases in frequency to tell you you're climbing faster or slower. And it has this horrible, sinking, dreadful sound that gets louder as the sink rate goes up. So frankly, when I'm flying the glider in a condition like this, I just push until that sound stops. And what would it be in this airplane? I just guessed 30 knots. But so you're going to have 20 or 30 knots plus the tailwind, which is going to give you a very nice scoot out of that sinking
air.
Right.
So you'd have, I'm just guessing with my example of 123 knots, plus that tailwind, plus the true airspeed increase, yeah, you're going to have a pretty significant ground speed. But you say that if that's not enough to get out of the sinking air best, what would you recommend without a variometer for this pilot?
Well, I said in the discussion, I 20, maybe 30 knots. It would be my suggestion. So we're going to get the tailwind. We're going to move fairly fast out of there, but we need to get out of there. We're getting low quickly. By the time we complete this turn, we're going to be down.
But is it cruise speed plus 20 or 30 knots?
No,
or
I was adding that to VY in this case.
Okay. Well, we're...
this is probably a situation where the specific number isn't as important as fly faster through sync. And if we do something in that direction, then maybe we're at least doing better. Catherine.
Yeah, I'm glider rated, but nowhere current like Wally is. So I've got a question for Wally. My understanding about speed to fly is it's best glide corrected for wind effects. So if you have favorable winds, in other words, rising air or a tailwind, then you can afford to slow down. And if you have sinking air or a headwind, things that decrease your performance, you need to speed up. So my understanding and my question for Wally is this correct? As when this pilot turns around, I don't think he is going to have to be maintaining that higher airspeed very long. Is that correct? Once he stabilizes and not in sinking air and he is in, you know, has a tailwind, he can actually afford to fly slower. Is that correct?
Once he gets out of the dreadful sinking air that he's in, yes. Then he can back it off to VY or whatever speed is appropriate for that, yes.
Steve, I know you've got some glider time. What's your thinking here as an airplane pilot, flying an airplane, but with that glider knowledge in the back of your head here? You agree with this speed to fly discussion?
I do. St. MacCready, beloved of all glider pilots. Gliders will have calculated and demonstrated polar curves that show you a much better idea for that particular glider and that particular configuration, whether to fly faster, slower, given the lift or sink in which you're flying. The basic idea, as Wally said, is don't hang around in sinking air. And to sort of drop the other shoe on that, if you memorize three things about a glider, there's best glide, there's minimum sink, and then there's what you fly in the pattern or on final. Minimum sink, it might be a speed you'd consider if you were in rising air. Not our situation here, but as you understand how a glider pilot thinks about this. Generally speaking, you're not going to find a polar curve for your airplane. Obviously, fly faster, but how much faster, we just don't know. But the good news is, with that tailwind, a minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, something like that, then figure out whether you're out of the problem.
All right, Kevin, I'm going to try to sell you on something here. So,
good luck.
Let's say we turned and we did our speed to fly and we made it out and it all worked and now we're back kind of out of the mountain wave area. Life has returned to normal. What do you think about climbing back up to 10,500 and taking another run at this ridge just higher? Maybe we'll be above the wave.
I don't like my odds. I'm not saying I wouldn't think about it because I surely would think about that. I definitely would have that thought process. But no, I don't like the odds of being able to outclimb the waves in this area, and the terrain is high enough that me and my non-pressurized, I think this is normally aspirated airplane, that just does not sound like I would have good odds.
Dave?
I don't think, you know, a 2,000 foot difference would be enough to really convince me to go through that same route again. You know, I'd be tempted to land somewhere southeast. I'd potentially look for a route with lower terrain, you know, if that was available. I'm still bothered by the lack of specificity when it comes to the speed for this pilot to fly. I mean, is it just VY plus the tailwind, or do we really want to get this over with fast and go right up to the yellow arc on the airspeed line? Give me as a lowly powered pilot some sort of guidance on this.
Catherine, can you help Dave out at all?
Yeah, well, the answer is no. It's purely a function of the shape of the drag polar. And the thing is, those are not published for powered aircraft like this Aero. So really, you know, Wally's offering some thumb rules that work for a glider. They're probably sort of in the ballpark, kind of. And that's all really you can do because those aren't published. It would be nice if those were published, but they're not.
And Wally, how fast is this scenario going to be over? I mean, to Dave's point, if we turn around here and we accelerate and we've got a tailwind, I mean, we're talking about maybe a minute or two in this condition?
I suppose so, yeah. She explained very nicely why we can't give a precise speed. And all truth be told, I didn't want to put a precise speed in the scenario, and Jeff made me. But the seat of the pants analysis, that's sort of what I use in a glider. When you make that turn and you're in that sinking air, you feel yourself very light in that seat. You're not pressing down. And I just keep pushing on the stick to increase the speed. And pretty soon you begin to feel that 1G feeling in the seat. And that's the time to bring the nose up and start slowing down. And you can keep you can start conserving altitude by slowing down a little bit because you've now probably gone out of the sink. That's not a good answer for a Piper Aero pilot who has only done this once in their life. But so that's why you just have to accelerate some. The big deal is getting downwind here. That's the solution to get you out of this.
All right, so I'm going to pull us back out. We're talking about how we react to this. I want to talk about how we could have predicted this, because obviously this surprised our pilot this day. And let me be devil's advocate. Let me advocate on behalf of the pilot here. Come on, the wind is blowing 30 knots 300 days a year in California at altitude, and there's not mountain wave every single day out there. I see the rule of thumb about blowing across the ridge within about 30 degrees. Give me something more. Colleen, you live out this way. I mean, what do I need to be looking for to really be considering mountain wave other than just it's blowing at altitude?
I'm looking for the direction of the wind. Now, I don't fly through this area very much, but anything that's within a 30-degree cone of perpendicular to that ridge is going to cause trouble. And I actually question, should this person even have started this trip? That's going to be a miserable trip. Now, it did say it was smooth, but that's at that altitude. And even if he moves laterally along the ridge, he might start to find a lot of really rough air. If I were to undertake a trip like this, I would have taken it at 10,000 and accepted that headwind, knowing that I would probably have a rough ride at least at some point, maybe descending into Porterville, even in the Central Valley, make sure everything is strapped down in the back of the airplane. It can be pretty nasty on a day like that, and I would rather stay on the ground.
Steve, how about the advice of crossing the ridge at 45 degrees? You'll sometimes hear that, so that if I expect this condition, if I cross it at 45 degrees, it's a quicker, easier turn to get out of here. You like that advice in this case? Should the pilot have planned that?
Yes. I mean, you as a gentleman, and I'm a flatlander. I fly in Michigan. I get thermal lift. I look for Walmarts. It's not that I'm doing ridge soaring or anything like that. But if you're going to cross a ridge, especially from the lee, you need to not be pointed right at the ridge. To add to that, what's on the other side of the ridge, should I get over it? Because you might have to do it on a moment's notice. The bottom is falling out of the aircraft. So approaching at a 45, having less than a full 180 degrees to turn is a way better idea.
All right, so this pilot could have done a little bit more pre-flight briefing, could have looked at the wind's law forecast, noticed it's the direction's correct, the speed is fairly high, seems to be fairly consistent. There's not any shear. It's pretty much out of the northwest all the way from the ground up. But those were missed. Kevin, let's say I'm en route now and I'm cruising along. Is air traffic control going to help me at all? Do they know about mountain wave? Do they get reports of this at this altitude? You'll sometimes see lots of mountain wave pyreps out west from airliners in the 30s, but how about here? Can I call ATC and ask if they've got reports of mountain wave? Will you know?
Yeah, I do think that's a good resource. And even if maybe the controller doesn't have knowledge of mountain wave in there, maybe you're the first small GA airplane that's flown through there in the last few hours, they can certainly ask others for pyreps and that kind of thing. I would expect controllers that work this airspace to have some knowledge of mountain wave and the issues associated with it just because they deal with it on a daily basis.
Colleen?
Usually what happens with me, if I'm in an area where there's a lot of mountain wave, the controller just assumes when he sees my altitude deviations, and it's almost like he assumes that I have a block that I can operate in. And I'm trying my best to keep my, you know, VFR altitude, but knowing that I'm not going to muscle the airplane around, it'll eventually come back down once it goes up. They're usually pretty permissive about that.
And Wally, I want to get to you and also ask you, are there visual signs here? I mean, obviously it's a clear day today, but is there anything I should be looking for?
Well, if you can see lenticular clouds, that would clearly tell you there's a mountain wave, and you can virtually see the curve in the clouds. So sure, that would be a good clue. But I think another good clue, most of us self-brief through our iPads or whatever sources we use. But in a situation like this, particularly if you're a pilot not used to flying in this area and may not recognize the clues that could be a mountain wave day today, is to call flight service. Those guys brief people and talk to people, and they may very well be aware that these are conditions that could produce a mountain wave.
Dave, how about the autopilot here? The pilot's using autopilot, I think wisely clicks that off when he senses something is wrong. If we think we might be going to encounter a mountain wave on our flight, should we hand fly, or do you like the autopilot idea?
You know, if I were going to use autopilot and I had a level button, the level button can be your friend in this. You know, when I've encountered mountain wave in a region other than this, you just ride the ups and downs in level flight, and that avoids, you know, the spinning trim wheel and these huge indicated airspeed deviations that this pilot is encountering. And, I'm thinking back to your previous question about, you know, if you see the winds that are going to be this strong, you know, it's going to be a potentially miserable ride and, you know, potentially dangerous crossing the ridges in this airplane at this altitude. I'm just thinking, what is the right answer then? Do you take a coastal route, or what would you do differently to avoid this?
That's my question exactly. Even in this case, we've escaped it. We've landed. This is not uncommon weather for California. What's the answer, Colleen? How do I get home today or tomorrow?
Well, you started down in Southern California, and you have to cross this bowl that is the LA Basin. And it's ringed with mountains. It's like Mount Doom and Mordor. Sorry for the Tolkien fan here. Once you get over those mountains into the Central Valley, the San Joaquin Valley, you're not home free, but you're, and this guy was pretty close. He almost made it across that last ridge. But those mountains are always, if it's not weather that's shrouding the top of the mountain, so you have to climb over it if you can, it's winds and waves. So it's actually pretty tough. Going up the coast, I don't think is an issue. There's a restricted area around Vandenberg that you'd have to skirt going out to sea. There's mountains in the San Bernardino area that are also going to provide, you know, bumpy ride. There's a lot of mountain ranges in even west of the San Joaquin Valley over towards Monterey. So you kind of just lucked out on this day. I think there's some days in California that we just should choose to keep it on the ground.
How many people here learned about mountain wave in any of their primary training? Any show of hands? I got a couple. Okay. Mostly on the job training here. I've seen it in action. Is there any value for a pilot like this in maybe going with a more experienced pilot or a glider pilot? What do we think about taking a look or learning on a day like this, Kevin?
I'm one around the table here that does not have a glider certificate, but I do have some glider time. So I know just enough to maybe a combination of to be dangerous or, but also to maybe help keep me out of trouble. And to that end, I think it's a really good idea. Not any different than I would recommend people getting some time on a tailwheel airplane or anything else that's outside of their normal. Getting a little bit of time in a glider, some dual in a glider, can teach you some of the very basics of this type of stuff, where the concept of flying a higher speed to get out of the sinking air, that makes a lot of sense to me, even though I'm low time in gliders.
Catherine?
Yeah, I'm all for anybody. I'd advocate anybody get a glider rating. I couldn't believe how much I learned about flying when I got my glider rating. And if you don't have the time for that quite yet, just read about glider flying. There's so many topics. I'm just stunned that in the power community, we don't read about those.
Is there a time other than a mountain wave scenario in a powered airplane or I should use that concept? Is there some other time when that's useful, or is that just academic otherwise? Is there any other scenario in a powered airplane where we might want to use that? Catherine, I'll go to you real quick because you were nodding.
Yeah, so interestingly, there are a lot of airspeeds that we have. We like to think that, you know, VX is a fixed speed. VX is not a fixed speed. Best glide if you are in a powered aircraft, it's not a fixed speed. It really is speed to fly. So, you know, if you, like I say, if you have increasing performance or better performance, you can afford to slow down in general. If you have worsening performance, like, you know, headwinds and you know, downwardly moving air, you need to speed up. And that was just new to me. I had no idea when I pursued my glider rating that those speeds weren't fixed. They're not fixed. You'll learn a lot about powered flying if you go for your glider rating.
And not just to escape the sink, but they don't publish it, but there is a minimum sink airspeed at which any particular aircraft will fly. The idea there being, I just lost the engine and I've got a place to land under me that I can make it to. Now I want to maximize my time in the air, and the minimum sink airspeed will give you that. It's not published for airplanes. It's a little slower than your VY, or, you know, the best glide speed. Pitch for something like that, which gives you an additional minute, which is a long time. Maybe this is where I figured out I've got the fuel selector on an empty tank. Sometimes it's to give you more time over the good stuff.
Dave.
And a fun memory of the late John Kunis, who you may know from Pilot Getaways magazine. Brilliant guy, former Jet Propulsion Laboratory engineer, a really fun pilot to fly with, but exasperating sometimes because on this particular trip, we were trying to make an extremely long leg, sort of max range in his Cessna 185, and he wanted to fly as close to the absolute ceiling as he could. So it was kind of lumpy air, and he was, you know, reciting this speed to fly. Here, you know, minimum sink, speed to fly. You know, I'm going to hold my altitude. We're going to get through this sinking air quickly so we can get back to the rising air and fly slower so we can extend our range and fly as high as possible. And I just want to say, as a passenger on that flight, it was miserable because, you know, the downs get accelerated and the ups get, you know, it's a roller coaster. And it was a really unpleasant experience from a passenger standpoint. But John was loving it because, you know, his mind was just working overtime, crunching all the numbers and figuring out all the benefit he was getting from the rising air while minimizing the sinking. We were up there a really long time. It seemed interminable to me, but it was looking back on it, was really good fun.
So I'm not going to try to save myself with a sudden knowledge about speed to fly. But I will say, back on the issue of flight training and getting a glider rating, you can play with this stuff in a powered airplane. And the very first time that I had a FAM flight around the area where I was still a private pilot, which is the Edwards area, my instructor took me on a big roundabout and showed me if you fly along the ridges, you can find lift and you can find, he was showing me what the air was doing. And oftentimes I will just kind of go and hunt and peck around the mountains to see where I can find that updraft. As if I'm a glider pilot, I'm not scraping the belly on the rocks, but I'm experiencing what the glider pilots are seeing, and it gives you really good insight into what the terrain is doing with the wind.
That's an excellent point. Wally?
What David just described is precisely how a glider pilot would fly cross country on a thermal day. As you proceed into the lift, you would slow down and you'd get as much altitude as you can, and as you move out of that thermal and into the sinking air, which surrounds the thermal, most people will speed up while they're still in the rising air to have that speed as they get through the sinking air quickly. So it's a roller coaster ride, but we call it dolphin flying, and you can go from cloud to cloud and go a long ways.
So this is an example where the glider pilot can feel Mother Nature working with and against you. I think I've heard lots of glider pilots say when they learn to fly gliders that you feel like you become more in touch with Mother Nature because you can work with or against it. And for this pilot, maybe some better pre-flight planning would have helped. But more than anything, that sometimes to escape bad air, quote unquote, the answer is going to be counterintuitive. It's going to be to push over and try to go faster to get out of there. And that's something I think a lot of pilots could think about before their next ridge crossing. If they encounter something like this, the answer is not always VY.